This is Audible.
Sewing for Beginners. Step-by-step guide to hand sewing and sewing machine. Knitting for Beginners. Written by Claire Caruso. Narrated by Amy Saxton. Chapter 1. Sewing, Tools and History. The practice of sewing, as in using thread and needle to attach various kinds of material, has been dated to at least 20,000 years ago. Sewing is practically a universal occurrence, and the actual beginnings of it stretch back to the beginnings of history. It predates the weaving of cloth by many centuries, and was used to stitch together hides, furs, and bark for clothing and other uses. Early sewing needles were made from bone, wood, or natural needles taken from plants, as Native Americans did with the agave plant. The earliest verified sewing needles made from iron date back to the 3rd century BCE and were found in what is now Germany. Chinese archaeologists report finding a complete set of iron sewing needles and thimbles in a tomb dating from the Han Dynasty, 202 BC to 220 AD in China. This is the earliest known example of a thimble in history. The thimble was developed to assist early sewers to push needles through thick hides and furs, and was first made from bone, wood, leather, sometimes glass and porcelain. Later, thimbles began to be made from metal, and before the 18th century, dimples in a thimble had to be punched into it by hand. The thimble also became an object of beauty, with thimbles made from precious and semi-precious stones and precious metals. The first thread was made from plant fibers and animal sinew, which was used to sew together hides and furs for clothing, blankets, and shelter. Later it was found that fibers from plants and animals could be spun together to make thread. The ancient Egyptians made thread by spinning these fibers together and devised methods of dyeing the thread using berries and plant matter. In China and Japan, silk fibers taken from the cocoon of the silkworm was spun to make very fine thread. For most of the history of sewing, it was done by hand. From the simplest stitches to ornate decorative work was done with a needle, thread, and a steady hand. It remained so until the first patent for a machine that emulated hand sewing in 1790 in England. It is not known whether there ever was a machine built from the 1790 patent. The first functioning sewing machine was issued a patent to Barthélemy Timonier in France in 1830. It used a single thread and a hooked needle to make a chain stitch similar to the one used in hand embroidery. The inventor was nearly killed when enraged French tailors rioted and burned down his garment factory because they feared the machine would cause unemployment. In 1846, the American Elias Howe was issued a patent for his machine, but the mass production of the machines did not happen until the 1850s, when Isaac Singer built the first truly successful sewing machine. With needle, thread, thimble, and machine, the art and craft of it has not only formed items for our use and comfort, sewing has helped form civilization itself. Chapter 2. An Overview for Beginners. There are so many advantages to learning how to sew. It's relaxing, creative, and fun. Being able to mend ripped and torn clothing will save you money. And once you develop your sewing skills, you can make a little extra on the side doing sewing projects for other people. So what does a beginner need to know before getting serious about sewing? Here are a few things you'll need to think about. Learning how to sew. Learning how to sew can seem intimidating, especially if you've rarely, if ever, picked up a sewing needle. But no matter how much sewing experience you have, there are countless ways to begin or continue your sewing education. Taking a class is a quick way to learn about the art and craft of sewing. There's probably a local community college or community center in your area that offers sewing courses. Classes for beginners usually meet once a week for up to 6 weeks and focus on teaching basic terms and techniques, giving you a solid foundation to build on. If you're lucky, you can take one of these classes for free. But even if you have to pay a small fee, what you learn will make the cost worthwhile. Books can also help you develop your sewing knowledge. If you've never really sewn before, learning specific techniques from a book can be a challenge. But books can teach you about different techniques, important definitions, different types of sewing, the wide array of fabrics there are to choose from, and so on. Sewing terms and techniques every newbie should know. Are you new to sewing? If you are, then you're probably feeling a little overwhelmed right about now. There are just so many new things to learn and know. There are hundreds of words and terms you probably don't know the meaning of, not to mention the dozens of sewing techniques you've never even heard of before. The trick is not to try to learn everything all at once. Instead, you should start with a few basic terms and let your knowledge slowly grow over time, right along with your sewing skill. In the meantime, here are a few basic sewing terms and techniques to help get you started. 1. Darning, a technique used to repair holes in a piece of fabric. Using a needle and thread, a weave is created to fill in a damaged area. When the garment is ripped, torn, or has worn patches due to heavy use, darning can be used to salvage it, meaning you don't have to toss it out and spend money on a replacement. While you can darn with a sewing machine, most do it by hand, especially when the area in need of repair is relatively small. 2. Embroidery. Embroidery is a type of decorative needlework that employs a variety of different needles, threads, and stitches. Using threads of different colors, a picture can be created using nothing but stitches. While it's possible to use a machine to create embroidery, many prefer embroidering by hand. While hand embroidery is more challenging, it can also be more relaxing. 3. Muslin. Considering how expensive some fabrics can be, the last thing you want to do is use one of them to create a garment you end up not liking. Instead, you should use a less expensive fabric to create a test garment, or muslin first. A test garment allows you to judge whether or not you will like the finished garment. You can also test whether or not it will fit properly and comfortably. Creating a test garment is also a good way to try out unfamiliar sewing techniques. You can afford to make mistakes on a test garment that could be costly on the real deal. Muslin is also the name of the fabric often used to make these test garments. This unbleached, loosely woven cotton is usually much less expensive than other fabrics and makes for an affordable test subject for your new sewing creations. 4. Needlework. Anything you do with a needle can be called needlework, but the name is usually applied to decorative sewing techniques like those used in embroidery, quilt making, knitting, crocheting, tapestry making, and lace making. All of these sewing crafts require a great deal of creativity, finely tuned motor skills, and hand-eye coordination. However, while challenging, needlework can also be very relaxing and rewarding. 5. Notions. Notions are the little odds and ends used in the sewing crafts. Anything that gets sewn on or attached to something else can qualify, including buttons, appliques, zippers, and snaps. The small tools and supplies used in sewing can also be referred to as notions. These can include thimbles, pins, thread, tweezers, and threaders. 6. Patchwork. When you sew two pieces of fabric together, that's called patchwork. The first type of patchwork most people probably think of is quilting. However, this technique is good for more than making quilts. In fact, it can be used to make everything from diaper bags to jackets to curtains to decorative art pieces. One impressive type of patchwork tries to simulate stained glass windows using nothing but fabric and thread. 7. Pattern. In sewing, the word pattern has two definitions. First, it can refer to any garment you might use as the inspiration for a creation of your own. If you like a dress enough to make your own version of it, that original dress is your pattern. Pattern also refers to the paper template you can use to make garments. These templates are pinned or taped to a piece of fabric. The fabric is then cut into the proper shapes before being sewn together. Using patterns is an affordable way to fill your closet with a stylish and fashionable wardrobe. 8. Quilt. Quilting is probably the most common and popular type of patchwork. In this technique, pieces of fabric, or blocks, are sewn together to make a much larger piece, like a bed covering or wall hanging. Quilting, which was born of necessity, has truly become an art form. Many quilters spend hundreds of hours creating a single quilt, from design to creating the individual blocks to assembly. 9. Yarn. Yarn is the backbone of all of the sewing crafts. Without it, we couldn't sew a ripped shirt, knit a sweater, make a quilt, or even weave fabric. For home sewers, the type of yarn used most often is sewing thread. Yarn can either be made with natural materials like cotton, wool, and cashmere, or synthetic materials like acrylic and nylon. And yarn is available in every color of the rainbow. If you can imagine a color, you can probably find thread to match. Chapter 3. Top Tips for Learning How to Sew. Different people have different kinds of hobbies. Sewing is one of the common hobbies which are usually found among the women. If you are interested in sewing, then you can surely create some work of art. First of all, you need to learn how to sew. There are lots of people who do not like the designs of the garments available in the stores. They want to create their own designs. Needlework can be of great help at this point of time. If you have interest in sewing, then you can learn how to sew at any point of time and create your own designs. There are various ways to learn this art. You can either join a good sewing school in your locality, or you can even learn it online. These days, very few people have enough time to go to the sewing schools. This is the reason why they show a lot of interest on the online lessons. You need to learn certain tricks and tips which can help you to sew. Sewing patterns are a very important part of this art. With the help of these patterns, you will be able to create some extraordinary and unique designs. If you really want to make the best of this art, then you need to follow the tips properly. The first thing that you need to do is get a good sewing machine. If your sewing machine has become too old and it does not work properly, then it is always better to get rid of it and buy a new one. If you are a beginner, then you should choose the kind of machine that is suitable for the beginners. Other than choosing a good machine, it is also important to pay attention to the kind of needle you use. Different kinds of patterns require different kinds of needles. Whenever you start a new work of sewing, always make sure that you use a new needle. After you are done with the needle, it is time to choose the thread. Beware of the bad threads. Bad threads are widely available in the market, and if you are unable to spot the difference between the bad and the good thread, then you might fall into trouble. The use of the bad threads in the machine can sometimes damage your machine. This is the reason why you need to be very careful. You should always buy your threads from an authentic store. You need to get the best sewing pattern for creating the best design. The sewing patterns are widely available on the internet these days. You just need to choose the right pattern for the right thing. You get patterns for garments, curtains, pillow covers, as well as quilts. These days you can easily download these patterns and take a printout to follow them. You will also find various sewing forums present on the internet where people discuss about sewing. You can easily join these forums for more knowledge. Choosing the right sewing tools. A sewing machine is the most essential sewing tool. If you are a beginner, you will need a sewing machine that can at least sew a straight stitch, sew in reverse, and sew a zigzag stitch. Before you use any sewing machine, it is recommended that you read its manual booklet. This is not just for the health and safety purposes, but so you can get information as to how to thread the machine properly. There are various needles you need to take into consideration. Machine sewing needles vary in size and type. The type of needle will depend on the fabric, the thread you will be using, and the stitches you will be making. The most common are universal needles for woven fabrics. Machine sewing needles need to be replaced often as they become dull and useless with constant use. Similar to machine needles are hand sewing needles. These will become very useful to sew buttons and hems, and they can come in various sizes. Look for a variety pack of hand needles that gives you a selection of point styles and eye sizes. Straight pins are used to hold two pieces of fabric together in place while sewing. There is different needle thickness for different types of fabric. The silk needles are mostly used for thin fabrics and can slide effortless without leaving holes. Thicker needles are used when sewing leather. Most beginners will purchase cultured head pins as they are easier to spot whilst sewing. Threads are essential for attaching pieces of fabric together. The type and color of thread will depend on the fabric you are working on. Most people tend to use polyester thread instead of cotton threads to achieve the top stitching effect. Sharp and precise cutting tools are also very important for any sewing projects. You will need these for cutting threads and trimming fabrics. You should look for scissors specially designed for dressmaking. These are about 8 to 10 inches long and often called dressmaking shears. You should only use these scissors for sewing to keep the blades sharp. Seam ripper is another great accessory for sewing. This tool will allow you to rip through the machine or hand-stitched seams easily without damaging the fabric. The tool is U-shaped at the top and has one point that forks out to become a blade, and the other point as a small ball. Choosing the right sewing tools is extremely important. With the right selection of tools, you can learn and improve your sewing skills easily. Chapter 4. Beginning Sewing. Setting up your sewing area. What you really need is a work surface where you can use your sewing machine. You can make it with a kitchen table or office desk if you must. You will probably become tired or sore more quickly at a workstation of this type because it is really too high. A better choice is a sewing machine cabinet. There are cabinets where your sewing machine actually attaches to the inside of the cabinet or cabinets where your machine sits in a lowered area of the top surface and can be lifted out. Either type of table only requires a small amount of floor space, and some of the built-in types allow the machine to drop down when not in use. Then half of the tabletop folds over, turning the unit into a small, multi-purpose table. Most sewing cabinets also have some sort of storage. Some have cabinet doors that swing open to allow knee room when you are sitting at them, and, mounted inside the doors, there are spindles for storing thread spools. Some cabinets have drawers for your sewing tools and accessories. You will undoubtedly need more storage space than your sewing cabinet provides, so you might want to consider some other storage as well. Sets of plastic drawers on casters normally sold for craft storage, scrapbooking storage, etc., are a good alternative because you can easily roll them wherever you need them. Other options are stackable plastic boxes. They can even be hidden away in a closet. The storage boxes that fit under your bed can be used too. Better yet, sew a storage device. You can find creative projects for storage in all kinds of places. Just keep your eyes open. 12 to 14 inch long magnetic bars for holding tools can be mounted to a wall. They can be found for about $10 a pair at the hardware store. The magnets are strong and easily hold shears, scissors, seam rippers, and even whole packages of needles. Fabric storage and pattern storage are the two biggest issues. For fabric, if you don't have a dedicated sewing room, some choices are those under-the-bed boxes with lids to keep the dust out. Another option is to fold each piece of fabric over a wire clothes hanger and hang it in a closet. There are cardboard boxes you can buy that are just the right size for patterns. But if you don't fold the pattern just right to get it back into the original package, they won't fit anymore. Standard file folder storage boxes from any office supply store work better. Two patterns will fit side by side along the longer, legal size side. And if you have one that won't go back in the package, stick it in a clear Ziploc freezer bag to keep all the pieces together and it will fit in the file folder box. A great way to store current projects you are working on, whether it's a pattern being altered or cut pieces you haven't sewn together yet, is to fold them over a wire clothes hanger and clip a regular clothespin or two on to hold everything. Then put the hanger in a closet. When you are ready to work again, simply pull the hanger out and everything is there, together and flat and ready to go. If you have several projects on the go at once, make sure the pattern name or number is facing out when you hang it. Then you can easily look through the hangers to find the one you want. You can even attach the original pattern envelope to the hanger with a clothespin for easy identification. For cutting out patterns, most people use their kitchen table, a craft table, the floor, or even their bed. Any large, flat surface will do. Again, if the surface is too high or too low for you, you will find you get tired or sore quickly. An ideal surface is a table with a hard, smooth surface that is 30 to 36 inches high, if you stand to cut. If you like to sit down to cut, a 26 to 30 inch high table is better. The table should ideally be about 4 to 6 feet long and a width you can comfortably reach across. If you prefer to cut from a sitting position, make your table narrow enough that you can reach across it from your chair. An ironing board isn't ideal for pressing while sewing. It really isn't wide enough or sturdy enough. When you are adhering interfacing, for example, you need to put quite a lot of pressure on the iron. Your ironing board may crumble under that pressure, but a countertop or a table can take the pressure, as long as it can also take the heat and steam. The chair you sit in while sewing is very important. A comfortable one that swivels and rolls is a very good choice. Bear in mind that your feet must reach the floor to work the sewing machine pedal. Good back support will enable you to sew in comfort for longer periods of time. Flooring in your sewing area is a bit controversial. I prefer linoleum, so when pins drop, they are easy to pick up. Use a magnetic pin holder for quick retrieval, and for smooth and easy rolling of the chair. But some people prefer carpet because it's softer to stand on. A smooth floor has the disadvantage of allowing the foot pedal to scoot around. This can be solved by putting a small rectangle of rubber shelf liner under the pedal. The same material under a serger will keep it from vibrating around on its table too. Sewing cabinet ideas. A sewing cabinet is ideal for those who sew as a hobby or as an occupation. They can easily place their sewing equipment, sewing needles, threads, and other materials in the cabinet to avoid being messy. It can also serve as a base for a sewing machine, so that there is a sturdy foundation to work on. If you are looking for this kind of cabinet, you can simply buy one from the department store or purchase it online. You can customize and build one as well using the right hand tools and wood. You can decide on what to add on your own cabinet, such as shelves, desks, compartments, drawers, and the like. By doing this, you can exercise safety, orderliness, and efficiency in sewing. The materials needed to build this cabinet are wood, gloves, protective eyewear, nails or screws, hammers, door hinges, saw, drill, and paint. The first thing to do is to decide on the dimensions of the cabinet. This depends on the size of the storage that you need, as well as the amount of working space you usually occupy when sewing. The next step is to measure and cut the wood to build the main frame of the cabinet, which includes the top, sides, and bottom. Fasten these together with screws, glue, or nails. You can then install shelves, attach foldable desks, or make doors and compartments in the cabinet. Make sure that every part of it is stable enough to store your sewing tools and machine. The last step is to sand the cabinet smoothly and paint it or design it to your liking. If you find that the cabinet still has extra space for storage, then you can put other things in it. Chapter 5. Sewing Machine. Buy a sewing machine with these 10 buying tips. These days, when you decide you want to buy a sewing machine, there is a large range of styles, models, and prices from which to choose, and can be rather confusing. However, if you know what to look for while you're buying, it's a bit easier. Of all the tools you'll buy for your sewing room, the sewing machine is the largest investment by far, so you'll want to make sure it is the right one for you. 1. First, decide on how you'll be utilizing your sewing machine. Will you be sewing clothing, piecing and creating quilts, working with leather or denim, or creating embroidered items? The reason this is so important is because each sewing machine features different capabilities and you'll want to choose the one that will meet your specific needs. 2. Do you want an electrical, mechanical, computerized, compact, or serger sewing machine? The answer to this question will narrow your field quite a bit. 3. Do some research on sewing machine brand names, features, and price ranges. Check customer reviews as well to get an idea how well people either like or dislike a certain model of machine. 4. Before you even leave the house, decide on how much you can spend for your machine. The range of prices for sewing machines can range from under $100 for a basic model to over $8,000 for a machine that does practically everything for you, except cut your fabric. Be careful not to buy a sewing machine based on everything you want to learn someday, but rather for the purposes for which you'll actually use it once you bring it home. 5. It is a good idea to attend some classes in your local area and talk to other people about their sewing machine. Be sure to ask a lot of questions. Some stores have several machines set up and will allow customers to give them a trial run. 6. Where will you spend your time sewing? If you have a larger space available, the size of your machine may not matter. However, if you are using a smaller area, you may want to consider a compact version to save on space. 7. Will you buy a sewing machine online or from a locally owned store? If you are purchasing online, make sure the dealer is reputable. Check the reviews left for the dealer and make sure to verify their address and phone number. Given the weight of a sewing machine, inquire about the shipping costs prior to placing an order. And ask about their return policy. Some companies will ask you to pay return shipping costs and possibly a fee. Even if you decide to purchase a machine online, be sure to first visit a local dealer to try the machines in which you are interested. 8. Make a list of the items you either already enjoy making or items you wish to make and take it with you when you visit a local dealer. Take along samples of fabrics you use most. 9. Test the basic stitches on the machine, as well as any other features of the machine you might use. All stitching should appear balanced, not loose. 10. Ask the dealer about the availability of replacement parts if they should be needed, the cost of servicing the machine, optional upgrades and warranties. A reputable dealer will be glad to answer any questions you have and allow you to try out any machine in their store. Be sure to ask also if they offer classes as a bonus with your sewing machine purchase. Although it is probably very simple to buy a sewing machine from an online dealer, there are several advantages to purchasing your machine from a local dealer. He is only a phone call away. He has direct support from the manufacturers of the machines he sells, and he probably already has a repair department on site, which means you won't have to wait as long for your machine to be fixed. Let's say you decide in a few years that you want to upgrade your machine. Some local dealers will gladly accept the machine they sold you as a trade-in on an upgraded model, which could save you some money. Buying a sewing machine can be an enjoyable and educational experience, as long as you are prepared ahead of time. You'll have the tools to make an informed decision and be very happy with the machine you do purchase. Once you've purchased your sewing machine, all that's left to do is take it home and start getting creative. Maintain your sewing machine in a few steps. A sewing machine can bring a lot of joy into your life as you begin to sew and create things on a regular basis. Whether you are somebody who is constantly sewing or just someone who pulls the machine out once in a while, there are a few things you should do to keep it in top operating condition. After all, you did spend money on it, so it is wise to protect your investment as much as possible, especially when it is not difficult to do. The best place to start with the maintenance steps is in the operator's manual that came with the machine. The manufacturer has the recommended steps in there to keep the sewing machine from breaking down. While many people fail to even open this book, it is important to do, and it's something that should be revisited periodically. Add some oil. One thing that will be recommended is to periodically oil your sewing machine. However, you cannot use just any oil. You should purchase the clear oil that is specifically made for sewing machines so that you do not damage any of the internal parts. Your operator's manual will have a section that details how to do this and what oil to use. After you have finished, you should run some stitches on it using some throwaway fabric in case any of the oil decides to escape out. Tighten any loose screws. When you are cleaning or just looking over your machine, you should also be checking that all screws are tight. try to have a small screwdriver on hand with you when you perform any maintenance. Make sure you only tighten any regular screws, though, as there could be some set screws that require a hex wrench. These special screws can affect the timing and should only be adjusted by someone who understands the inner workings of the sewing machine. Again, your owner's manual will help you if you are unsure. Remove excess lint that builds up. If you sew often, then you will undoubtedly have some lint built up in the hidden areas of your machine. This can lead to wear and tear of some of the parts, so it is important to clean this out once in a while. You can even make a habit to do this after each use. Sometimes a special brush or other tool will be included when you purchase your sewing machine. By just performing some basic maintenance, your sewing machine can last you many years. Whether you use it often or only pull it out of storage once in a while, it is important to take care of it. 7 tips to learning to machine sew. Sewing machines are really a wonderful invention. Imagine that clothing used to be made by hand sewing every stitch. A professional tailor could charge for high quality work, but many a home sewn garment was made only after hours and hours of hard work and finger pricking labor. Knowing how to use a sewing machine is not as easy as learning to use the dishwasher, the microwave, or the blender. It's a bit more technical than those appliances, though not rocket science. With patience, the right learning material, and a will to sew, you can be on your way to finishing projects as soon as you like. Here are 7 tips to get you on your way to learning to sew. 1. Read your sewing manual. It may sound dry and boring, but you'll save yourself lots of time and frustration if you read what the folks who made your machine advise you to do. 2. Practice threading your machine until you can do it in a few seconds. If the instructions aren't clear, get on the internet and look for images and videos to help you follow the instructions. 3. Practice winding your bobbin. Anyway, it's nice to have a couple of bobbins all wound and ready to go. 4. Practice sewing in a straight line. Almost any seam can be seen as a series of straight lines, even if they're very, very short straight lines. Practice on scraps of cloth, and even on paper. 5. Practice ripping seams. It's inevitable, and if you're good at ripping a seam without ripping apart the fabric, it will make your life easier and your garments more professional. You can use the scraps you sewed straight lines on for practice. 6. Practice finishing seams and pressing them open. Pressing your seams as you go makes a world of difference in how well your garment fits and looks. Make this a habit. 7. Start with easy projects. You'll feel more confident if you start with easy projects. Sewing machine settings. Adjustable pressure foot pressure. Sewing machines come with many different settings and features, and deciding which are best for the sewing projects that you would like to undertake is an important consideration. One setting in particular is the presser foot pressure adjustment setting. You may note, for example, that many machines come with adjustable pressure for the presser foot. Other machines have automatic pressure that adjusts automatically to the pressure needs of whatever is placed under the presser feet. This might sound somewhat confusing or even a bit technical, but it's really not. Remember that the presser feet hold the fabric against the feed dogs to assist them in moving the fabric along. Presser feet also apply varying amounts of pressure on the fabric to keep it secure as you sew. Lighter fabrics will usually require more pressure than heavier fabrics. The adjustable pressure settings allow you to determine the appropriate amount of pressure to be placed on the fabric. Why is this important? Using the incorrect pressure setting can drastically affect the outcome of your sewing. It can create problems such as skipped, uneven, or irregular stitches, fabric puckers, or the machine not feeding the fabric properly. Many times when you encounter these problems with your sewing, you may think that there is something wrong with you or something wrong with the machine. You may assume that you need to troubleshoot some other machine problem when what you really need is to just loosen the presser foot pressure setting, depending on how much you are placing under that foot. If the problem is indeed with the pressure setting, then doing this can dramatically improve your sewing machine's performance. Fabric will feed evenly and smoothly with perfect stitches and no puckers. You will need to check your manual for the proper pressure settings on your machine, but typically you will use the normal setting for regular sewing and non-stretchy fabrics. Lowering the foot pressure slightly may keep fine fabrics such as chiffon, lace, organdy, etc. from puckering. Knits and fabrics with a lot of stretch may also require a lower pressure setting to help maintain the pliability of stretch in the fabric. Typically, however, a lighter setting works best with heavier fabric, and lighter fabrics such as cotton may need a heavier pressure setting. Take the time to understand your sewing machine's pressure adjustment settings and use it to smooth out any problem areas in your project. And remember to check your sewing machine manual. With practice and patience, you can master it in no time. Chapter 6. Things that need to be in your hand sewing kit. Why you need a hand sewing kit. If you already have a sewing machine, you might be wondering why you need to put much effort into putting together a hand kit. But there are several reasons why this is a good idea. For one, even those who do most of their sewing on sewing machines will need to do some hand sewing every once in a while. Also, hand sewing kits can be portable. This means you can take them with you anywhere and work on some of your sewing projects, even when you don't have access to a sewing machine. And the truth is that many who are whizzes on the sewing machine are also adept at sewing by hand. So now that you know the importance of building a hand kit, what should you have in yours? The basic hand sewing kit. Buttons and other fasteners. Having buttons, snaps, and zippers in your kit will come in handy for making quick repairs. Fabric marking pens. These make it easy to measure and mark fabrics accurately, and the marking will come out in the wash. Hand sewing needles. You'll need needles in every length and size. You don't want to try hand sewing heavy fabrics like denim or corduroy with a needle that's too small. Measuring tape. No matter what you sew, measuring will probably be involved, so measuring tape is a must-have. A needle threader. Instead of suffering the frustration of trying to get a tiny piece of thread to go through the tiny eye of a needle, use a needle threader instead. A pincushion or magnetic pin holder. Good, old-fashioned pincushions help to keep straight pins under control. But if you want a more modern and high-tech solution, use a magnetic pin holder instead. Sewing scissors or fabric shears. Don't settle for a standard pair of scissors. You'll just be making things harder on yourself than they have to be. Sewing scissors and fabric shears are specially designed to make cutting fabric easier. A seam ripper. Seams can be surprisingly stubborn. While wrestling to remove a seam can give you a good workout, use a seam ripper if you want the job to be a little easier. Straight pins. Choose straight pins with round heads. They tend to be easier to work with than flat-headed straight pins. Thimbles. Thimbles help to protect your fingers from the pointy ends of needles. They can also help you get a needle through a thick, heavy fabric. Thread. You can buy thread in just about any color you can imagine. You should also invest in a spool of invisible thread. If you have to sew something that's white or yellow, but don't have any white or yellow thread, invisible thread is the answer. A container to hold it all. You can use anything from a basket to a diaper bag to a container specially made to hold sewing supplies. And believe it or not, that's just the tip of the iceberg. However, these are the essentials you need in your hand sewing kit. Other items like seam gauges, iron-on tape, and elastic will find their way into your kit over time, mostly when you need them for a specific project. As your experience grows, your sewing kit will also grow. Eventually, you might need to split your ever-growing sewing kit in two. Leave the bulk of your supplies in a stationary sewing kit that you'll leave in your sewing room. The portable sewing kit can be the one you take on long trips so you'll have something to do. The simple solution. If putting together a hand sewing kit from scratch seems daunting, there are ready-made sewing kits available. These kits, especially the more elaborate ones, come fully equipped with all of the supplies a sewer could possibly need. This can give you a great foundation to build on. Once you have your hand sewing kit put together, take some time to learn how to use it. There's no denying the speed and convenience of the sewing machine, but there's also no denying the satisfaction you can get from sewing by hand. Chapter 7. Basic Sewing Techniques. The finished item of clothing is one step ahead of just the cut and sewn fabric. The following pointers will make the procedure simpler to perform. The process is divided into three phases, namely pre-production, production, and post-production. Pre-production. A. Planning. If you ever go to buy household things without a shopping list, you are bound to forget certain items, or you are sure to buy more than the targeted products. Same thing happens when you kick off a sewing garment. It has been discovered that a tailor who mulls over and designs a garment complete with color sketches and smart thinking as well as a list of ideas that he will want, he would require less money and time for manufacturing the garment than if he simply banks on fate. A manufacturer should sit with sketchbooks and scribble pads with the thoughts on garments, nice designs, and bits and pieces of fabric. Mainly the pages are placed with a sketch of a garment, lists of things like hooks and eyes or approximate lengths of trim as well as buttons, embroidery thread, or other accessories. If you have got some fabric at home that you would like to manufacture a garment out of, you should add a piece of that in the sketchbook with the line drawing. Thus, you can choose lining fabric to compare or distinguish. The surprising matter is that you don't need any artistic skill to apply this technique. Just sketch out a rough, add color in, and make your lists. Now your action plan is prepared to be followed. You can get somebody who has good knowledge of drawing to delineate a primary shape of the types of garments you want to manufacture. Get them photocopied and apply them to draw on and color. In any case, you'll be prepared when you hit the fabric stall and they're running a sale. With a sketchbook nearby, you can compare the color of that $1.99 linen to the sample cloth of the brocade in your book and either purchase it or leave it. One more mode of making this method work for you is to photocopy pictures of the several types of garments and pieces of garments you need to make and staple those in your sketchbook together with fabric swatches. B. Choice of material. Garments manufactured in 16th and 17th century had a specific weight to them that is created by the types of fabrics both on hand and used. When sources state that a particular garment was manufactured of silk lined with taffeta, they're speaking of a quite heavy-bodied silk with a crisp silk taffeta lining. We can bear only such kind of silks that are much softer and thinner than would have been used. This problem can be overcome in two manners. First, shift to a heavier but less costly material that reproduces the appearance you're struggling to accomplish. Second, if heavier material is not available, or you would like to work with a thinner material, you can interline the garment. Interlining. Cut the interlining coating as with the outer coating. Place them together and handle them as one single coating of fabric during the creation stage. Baste or pin together as required. C. Pre-washing. Everything should be given a pre-wash without any exception, even though it says dry clean only. Give a burn test first to ensure there are no wonders. Give a pre-wash and then wash everything that is created of natural fibers together with silk and linen. The dryer is the main damager that wears and tears fabric. Therefore, dry the fabric after pre-washing, but the garment may finish up being drip-dried till it is thrown in the trash, relying on the fabric used. Before pre-washing, take a small swatch of the fabric and match it with the fabric after it has been pre-washed and dried. As a general principle, garments manufactured from upholstery brocades or jacquards must be drip-dried. If the garment is manufactured from high-class cotton, linen, or silk, it gets washed and dried per normal until, and unless the pre-wash swatch pointed out a severe loss of color, reduction, or other unwanted influences. Then it gets drip-dried only. we cannot overstress pre-washing. During the stage of manufacturing, contemporary fabrics are tremendously sized. The term sizing mentions the soak that most fabric endures, which provides them more body and shine after they are pressed through rollers and then placed on boards for transfer to the stall. After the fabric is washed, the size is washed out, and the fabric becomes softer and less shiny. Shrinking can also be prevented by pre-washing. Most contemporary fabrics are extended, a little or a lot, banking on quality, during the weaving and sizing procedure. If your fabric is not pre-washed before cutting and making project, you will have to be sorry after when you drop project and it gets smaller in very unwanted ways. The perfect mode to decide whether your fabric is made of a natural fiber is a burn test. If you are at a store and not sure of a fabric matter, you should ask for a cut and take burn test in the parking lot. D. Ironing. Since it is not easy to draw on wrinkled paper, it is tremendously difficult to cut out a garment on a wrinkled piece of cloth. It is advisable to iron out the fabric before cutting. E. Laying out the fabric. If you are cutting doubles and on the fold, it is really significant to line up the fabric before cutting it. If the fabric is not lined up before cutting doubles and on the fold, the grain lines for some of the parts could finish up being much dissimilar, and this will create a poor effect on the finished item. F. Pattern cutting. The grain lines cannot be taken for granted. You should cut out all parts of the garment, if shell, lining, and interlining are used, at the same time. Avoid using pins. Use pattern weights instead. This will prevent your patterns from getting punctured, and it makes the process more efficient. The costlier weights sold in fabric stores can be replaced by tuna fish cans, which provide inexpensive, superior options. Since the tuna fish packed in oil is not suitable, you are requested to choose the weight of tuna fish packed in spring water. Production. A. Construction. Separate the garment into various small parts and build those parts first. For example, labor the bodice first, building it and bringing it to the spot where all the other parts will be stored or connected. Next, go to the sleeves. Your approach should be to begin with the most challenging part, so that it might not come in your way later on. You can also set off with the middle part, since the part that everything else relies on. For the most part, this is the body section. B. Grading seams and points. This decreases volume and enables points to make a brittle line. Decreasing volume was popular in many of the garments of the 16th and 17th century. C. Clipping seams. Concave and convex are enabled by clipping seams to do their thing without wrinkling. Many of the seams in garments from the period are convex or concave. Clip them. Therefore, they cannot pull or wrinkle, and this clipping also makes the finishing fit improved and enables those seams to move and mold themselves around the body as they were intended to do. D. Pressing seams. Unless, and until, and even though you're sewing by hand, you are always advised to unlock all seams and iron them flat. Pressing is the major distinction between a dressmaking garment and a regular ready-made garment. Seams without press appear bulky and do not behave. Pressed seams have a beautiful finished look to them that considers the rest of the garment. E. Adding trim. At this phase, to insert trim either by hand or by machine assures that you can tuck the tails into closed seams afterward and makes it possible to lay the trim down on the shell only. Adding trim later signifies that you'll have to insert trim after all the parts are sewn together, and you'll have to work out what to do with the incomplete ends. F. Put it all together. Sew the shell and lining together after the shell parts and lining parts have been sewn together. This is how garment is constructed at present. You would put the lining and shell parts together and deal with them as one in the construction procedure if you were sewing by hand. G. Fitting. Make your final fitting before reaching the post-production state. Find out if armholes and neck gaps are too small. This final finish fitting will also establish the accuracy of the finished fit. On the whole, this is your last opportunity to modify things effortlessly. After things are completed, it's much more difficult to go back and mend fit. Post-production. A. Hand finish. It's a lot quicker to finish seams closed by operating the sewing machine from one side to the other side of them. Don't get tempted. A seam finished by hands is unbeatable. It appears improved, lies flatter, and doesn't upset the rest of the garment. Prejudice, or seam fastening, always looks beautiful if finished by hand. B. Finishing strokes. Life is generated in the garment by hand sewing buttons, buttonholes, and eyelet holes, and by other minute particulars. It may be trouble-free and quicker to achieve these things with your machine, but it won't seem as good, and it won't seem at period, which is the complete thought. Basic sewing tips for a quick fix. Maintaining and repairing vintage clothing is not as hard as it seems. All you need to know are a few basic stitches and have a few everyday supplies at the ready. There are, of course, more advanced techniques and processes, but it's important to know the basics first before moving forward. So if you have a well-loved vintage piece of clothing with a split side seam, dropped hem, or loose sleeve seam, don't give it up. Here's how to sew and repair clothing for the everyday vintage lover. There are a few essential tools you'll need, such as small cuticle scissors, preferably with a curved tip, and sharp fabric scissors, which will make clean cuts and help to keep certain fabrics from fraying on the ends. You'll find it helps to have needles of various sizes and a range of thread colors to match the stitches in your garment. Repairs will blend in better if they are done with matching color thread. Some things you'll also find helpful are push pins and straight pins to help hold the fabric in place while you sew, and a thimble. Try using waxed floss when you have to sew a very tough seam that keeps splitting, or when you're sewing thick fabric like jeans. Waxed floss is amazing. It will never split or loosen. You will be able to see the stitches quite a bit, so this only works for areas that aren't visible, or if you like the look of very noticeable stitches. There are three basic stitches that you should know. The backstitch. Once you get the hang of it, the backstitch is great on many different fabrics for making strong stitches that lay flat and won't tug. It is the strongest hand stitch that imitates a machine stitch. How to sew with a backstitch. Righties will work from right to left, and lefties will work from left to right. 1. Poke the needle down into the fabric, pulling as far as you can until the knot is lying against the fabric. 2. Poke up into the fabric with your desired stitch size, about 1/4 inches from the knot. Pull until taut, making sure not to ripple the fabric. 3. Poke downwards again into the knot. Pull until taut. You will have one visible stitch at this point. 4. Now poke up again through the fabric about 1/4 inches from the last place you poked upward from. 5. Repeat. Tie off when finished. The invisible slip stitch, or blind hem stitch. At a glance, this stitch may seem complicated, but it's actually pretty easy. It's important to buckle down and learn this stitch, because it is one of the most valuable stitches for everyday sewing. This stitch is used when you need your thread to be invisible from one side for whatever reason, like sewing in linings, sewing hems, or sewing garment sections together. Basically, 2 or 3 threads of the material are caught up by the needle each time, and this makes the stitches almost totally invisible from the one side. The thread is hidden inside of a fold, and the needle tunnels between the layers of the folded edge. That's the slip part. It can be a little tricky to keep this stitch flat, but it is essential if you want them to stay hidden. Tunnel the needle 1 millimeter or so from the fold of the folded fabric. Keep the thread snug, but not too tight, to pull the fabric and cause ripples. Here's how to do it. 1. Stick your needle up from behind the fold. 2. Make a 1/4 inch long stitch through the opposite side and reemerge. 3. Tunnel the needle about 1/4 inch through the fold for the next stitch and pull up the thread. This will be invisible on one side, so take care to practice first so you can see how to get the invisible part on the side that you want. The running stitch. This is the most basic stitch. It is used for seams and gathering and pulling fabrics to create ripples. How to sew with a running stitch. 1. After tying a knot on the end of your string, poke into the fabric. Up or down, it does not matter. 2. Then, just keep passing the needle over and under with a few fabric threads in between. Try to keep the stitches as even and neat as possible. Chapter 8. How to do basic stitches. Today it's real easy if you have a sewing machine, as you would rather use your sewing machines than do stitches by hand. But not everybody can afford or have a sewing machine, so that's why I'm going to explain some basic sewing stitches. Once you get the hang of these basic stitches and where they can be used, you can decide what works best for you. Check that you are using the right needle and thread for your fabric or garment. It's best to work with the correct equipment. The running straight stitch. This stitch is the basic one and is used most of the time. This stitch is used if you want to sew two pieces together when sewing, or can be used for basic mending as well. You would use a single thread and start sewing in a straight line, pushing the needle from the front to the back of the material. You would keep sewing in a straight line till you are at the end where you need to finish off. If you are scared that you cannot sew in a straight line, take a fabric marker or pins and mark the line for yourself. The length of your stitches will depend on your type of fabric. Short length stitches will work better for heavier fabrics. The basting stitch. This stitch is the same as the running straight stitch, it's just that the stitch length is much longer. This could be just to temporarily keep pieces of fabric together or for gauging. Gauging is large stitches where you can pull the fabric together to create frills. You must just knot the threads together at one end, then pull the fabric to create your frills or ruffles. The zigzag stitch. This stitch is in a Z format when you look at it. It helps with stretch fabrics. This stitch will allow enough stretch when the fabric is stretched. The more stretch there is in the fabric, the bigger your stitch will be. You will start the stitch the same way as your straight stitch, but instead of keeping the line straight, you will make one stitch, then draw the thread back into a Z direction. The hemming stitch. This stitch is not visible on the front, and there are different hemming stitches that can be used. The hemming stitch is the basic one, but there are the catch, slip, overcast, and invisible stitches that are all used for hemming. You'll need to decide when hemming a garment how visible you want your stitches to be, and what's best for your garment and fabric type. The back tack stitch. This stitch you will use when you've finished your sewing and want to end. You would use the back tack stitch. You will still start your stitch by using a straight stitch, but once you created one stitch, you will go back to the starting point of the back tack stitch and create another stitch. This will prevent your fabric or thread from unraveling. Three basic stitches for hand sewing. Sewing machines help to make sewing faster, but sometimes you need to sew an item by hand. For example, when you are repairing an item, it does take practice to make stitches that are the same length and that go in a straight line. So don't be discouraged if at first you don't like the way your stitches look. Keep practicing and you will get the hang of it. To help you get started, here are three basic stitches that you will need to know when sewing by hand. Backstitch. The backstitch has more strength and will hold better than the running stitch. The reason for this is that your stitches will overlap each other on one side of the fabric. Due to the overlapping stitches, the backstitch will appear different on both sides of the fabric. On one side, the backstitch has many small, even stitches spaced so close together that they look like one continuous line. On the other side, you will notice that the stitches overlap at the ends because the stitches on this side are twice the length as the ones on the other side. Start with a single piece of thread and knot one end. Start working from the bottom, or wrong side of the fabric, and insert the needle. Pull it through until the knot touches the fabric. The knot will be on the bottom. Go over a 1/4 inch and pull the needle through from the top to the bottom. You are then going to go back and insert your needle in the fabric halfway from where you are to the knot where you started. Basically, you will go back 1/8 of an inch. Pull the needle through. From here, you are repeating these stitches. Go over 1/4 inch and pull the needle through the fabric. Go back 1/8 of an inch and pull the needle through. Repeat until you get to the end. Basting stitch. The basting stitch is used as a temporary stitch to hold multiple layers together or to gather fabric together instead of using pins or needles to hold the fabric in place. It is much like the running stitch, except that the stitches are much longer. Start the basting stitch just like you would start the running stitch, except that you won't form any knots at the end of your thread. First, insert the needle on the wrong side of your fabric and pull it through. Leave a few inches of thread on the wrong side of the fabric and hold in place with your fingers so that the thread doesn't come out. This is called the thread tail. Then, from the right side of the fabric, place your needle halfway through. Angle it so that you can bring the needle back up. It can go over as much as 1 inch. Pull your needle through, but be sure to hold the thread tail in place so that you don't pull it out. Repeat the stitch as needed. When you no longer need the basting stitch, simply pull the thread out to remove the stitch. Running stitch. The running stitch is used for hemming or repairing clothes, to join fabric together, and for top stitching. It is the simplest stitch to learn because the stitch just goes in and out of the fabric. Unlike the back stitch, the running stitch does not double back on any stitches. Start with a single piece of thread and knot one end. Start working from the wrong side of the fabric. Insert your needle and pull it through. Go over 1/4 inch and insert the needle halfway. Then angle the needle so that it comes back up through the fabric 1/4 of an inch from where you put the needle in. Pull the needle and thread through. If you find it easier to keep the fabric smooth, you can place the fabric on the table and hold it down with one hand while you pull the needle through with your other hand. Your needle will now be on the right side of the fabric. Repeat this process of placing the needle in and over and then pulling the thread through. Chapter 9. Top 3 Mistakes That Most Cross-Stitch Enthusiasts Make. There are a handful of mistakes I see a lot of cross-stitch enthusiasts making from newbies or novices. I'm not a super picky stitcher by any means, but these few things can make a huge difference in your finished project, and if you're mindful of them while stitching your next project, I think you'll be happy with the results. Mistake number 1. Leaving the project in the hoop or Q-snap overnight. Please, I beg you, to stop torturing your cross-stitch project in such a way. When you're done stitching for the day, take the project out of the hoop, or scroll frame, or Q-snap, or whatever you're using to hold your fabric taut, and let the project rest. Your stitching needs its beauty sleep, too. Stitcher's note. If you're using a scroll frame or other frame where the fabric is sewn onto or more fixedly attached to the device, it is recommended that you loosen the tension slightly to leave the project rest overnight and when you're not stitching. Mistake number 2. Not crossing stitches in the same direction. This one isn't really a big deal, but it is something that makes the finished piece look better. It doesn't matter which direction your top leg of cross stitch is going. Just be sure they are all going the same direction. Consistency is really the key here. Stitcher's note. Right-handed stitchers usually have the top leg going bottom left to top right. Left-handed stitchers usually have the top leg going from bottom right to top left. Mistake number 3, not stopping to untangle the tangled floss. It happens to all of us at some point during almost every project. The floss gets tangled, and bam, there's a knot in it. Stitcher's note, if you know for a fact that you are not framing the piece when finished, then, by all means, feel free to leave those tangles in there and stitch onward. Chapter 10. How to do cross-stitch, Top 10 Beginner's Mistakes. Cross-stitch is a wonderful, rewarding hobby that can be enjoyed by people of all ages and abilities. Avoid these common beginner's mistakes, and soon you will be creating stunning pieces of cross-stitch work to treasure. 1. Choosing the wrong pattern. With the extensive range of charts on offer, it is often tempting to start with something too complicated. For your first cross-stitch project, choose a chart with relatively small design area and no more than 3 or 4 worked colors. You will have the satisfaction of completing it relatively quickly and can soon progress to something more challenging. 2. Tangling your threads. There's nothing more stressful than tangled threads, so always keep them organized. When starting a project, punch a line of holes in a piece of card and loosely tie each cultured skein through a separate hole. Label each hole with the appropriate thread reference number and chart symbol. 3. Not finishing your edges. Some even weave fabrics and linens fray easily. Before you start stitching, prepare your fabric properly by loosely backstitching around the edges with cotton. 4. Losing your place on the chart. For a large piece of work, it is sometimes hard to keep your place on the chart. Before you start your work, divide your chart into a grid of workable areas and mark with a cultured pencil. Stitch a corresponding grid onto your fabric using brightly cultured cotton. Sew loosely so that the cotton can be removed easily on completion of the project. 5. Stitching too tightly. Keep your stitches evenly tensioned or your fabric will buckle or stretch out of shape. Many cross-stitchers find that a hoop helps to keep the fabric taut as they work. 6. Not starting in the middle. The center of a chart is clearly marked. You should always start stitching from this point and work outwards to the edges of your design. Otherwise, your fabric will pull out of shape. 7. Leaving the needle in your work. Always remove the needle when you finish sewing to avoid rust marks staining your fabric. 8. Getting your work dirty. Grubby work looks unattractive. Wash your hands before you stitch and store ongoing work in a sealed bag or container. Finished pieces can be washed by hand with a gentle detergent, dry by rolling in a towel, never wring fabric. 9. Starting with a knot. Knots should never be used to start off a new thread. Instead, leave a 10 millimeter length of thread at the back of your work. Hold it against the fabric as you work your next stitches, and it will eventually be kept in place by the new stitches. Trim off any excess thread. 10. Straining your eyes. It is very important to avoid eye strain by working in a well-lit room. During daylight hours, work by a window where possible. Consider buying a halogen lamp for stitching in the evenings. If your eyesight is really poor, you might need to invest in a magnifier to place in front of your work. How to avoid stitching mistakes. Do not stitch on your lap. Make sure you can see where you are stitching. Buy enough cross-stitch floss right from the start. Do not tie knots under your project. Use 4 strands of thread instead of 6. Chapter 11. Simple projects you should start with. How to make a duct tape coin purse. This is a great little duct tape craft. This is simple enough that children can do it and produces something that looks great and is useful. Very small children will definitely require a little assistance, but they can still do much of it on their own, and they will feel good about themselves when they see the final result. You will need the tape of your choice, either a sharp shears or craft knife, and Velcro circles.
That's it.
Step-by-step instructions. 1. Cut off 5 strips of your favorite tape, approximately 4 to 5 inches in length. Tape them together, slightly overlapping each other, so as to form one sheet of fabric. Peel the resulting fabric and flip it over. 2. Do the same thing again, sticking these strips of tape to the sticky side. Now, it's a completed fabric sheet. The biggest part of the duct tape coin purse is now done, and the rest is all detailing. 3. Fold the bottom up, about 2 of the strips, to form the actual purse portion. Make sure that you leave an inch and a half or so above the folded section for the cover flap. 4. Cut a piece of tape the length of the folded side of the duct tape coin purse only. Using your scissors or craft knife, cut this piece of duct tape in half lengthwise. 5. Put half on each edge of the purse to hold the sides together. Remove any extra. 6. Now, cut another piece in half lengthwise and seal the edge of the cover flap all the way around. 7. Remove the extra tape carefully so as not to damage the purse. 8. Stick the fuzzy side of the Velcro circle to the middle of the cover flap, where you will want it to meet the front of the purse portion. Then attach the firm side of the Velcro circle to the fuzzy side. Remove the back and carefully close the cover flap so the firm part of the Velcro remains in place. You can always add your own creativity when crafting. For example, use different colors on the inside and outside of your duct tape coin purse. You could also make it larger or smaller. That's the beauty of duct tape crafts. Making a fleece winter scarf. A scarf can help to keep you warm during those cold winter months. Even on nights that are just a bit chilly, a scarf made of fleece can help you to stay snug and comfortable. Scarves are also a great fashion accessory. And if you're looking for an easy sewing project, this winter scarf is the perfect fit. What you will need: a piece of fleece, thread in a coordinating color, fabric scissors, a tape measure or measuring tape, a fabric pencil or fabric marker, optional. How much fabric will you need? How much fabric you'll need will depend on how long you want the scarf to be on the person who will be wearing it. Ideally, when the scarf is draped around the wearer's neck, the ends should reach to about their waist. However, it's okay if the scarf is longer or shorter. If it's too long, the wearer can just wrap it around their neck one or two more times than usual. If the scarf is too short, the wearer will simply do less wrapping. If you're making a scarf that can be used by anyone, your fabric can be about 4 to 5 feet long, or 48 to 60 inches, depending on your personal preference. If you're making the scarf for someone specific who is available for a fitting, drape the tape measure or measuring tape around their neck. Pull the free end down until it reaches their waist. Then, pull the other end of the measuring tape down until it reaches about the same length, and then take the measurement. This is how long your piece of fabric needs to be. Of course, if the scarf is for you, you can measure yourself in the same way. Doing this while looking in a mirror might make it a little easier. While the length of the fabric can vary, it should be 2 feet or 24 inches wide, no matter who you are making the scarf for. Working with standard fabric widths. If you like, you can make your scarf about 44 to 45 inches long. Typically, fabric is sold in bolts that are about 44 to 45 inches wide. So, if the only thing you want to make using this fabric is the scarf, you can have the fabric cut at the 2-foot mark. Yes, the scarf will be a little shorter, but it will still keep the wearer warm, and you won't have to deal with having more of a fabric than you want. This is also a great project if you have some extra fabric lying around and couldn't figure out what to do with it until now. Choosing your thread. When making a scarf, or almost anything else, you want to use thread that will disappear against the fabric. For a scarf made in a solid fabric, choose a thread in a matching color. For a scarf with a pattern fabric, choose a thread that matches the dominant background color. If there is no dominant color, choose a thread that matches the darkest color in the pattern. Hold a spool of thread against the fabric. This will help you see how much or how little the thread will stand out against the material. Making the scarf, the first steps. 1. Fold the fabric in half so that the wrong side, the side you aren't going to want people to see, is facing out. 2. Sew the scarf along its length, the long side. 3. Turn the fabric inside out so that the right side, the side you want people to see, is facing out. Stitching the ends. When stitching the ends, you have two options. If you like the scarf fine the way it is, here's what you do. 1. Fold one end of the scarf down about 1/4 inch. 2. Sew a stitch along the fold. 3. Fold the same end down another 1/4 inch. 4. Sew a stitch along this second fold. 5. Repeat steps 1 through 4 on the other end. Doing a double stitch on the ends will give the scarf a clean, finished look. If you want the scarf to have a little pizzazz, you can give it a fringe. This is pretty easy to do. 1. Lay your scarf out flat. 2. Using the fabric pencil and your measuring tape, draw a line about 6 inches from the end of the scarf. If you don't have a fabric pencil, you can use something else to make the line. Just make sure the line will come out in the wash. 3. Sew a seam across the line. 4. Using your scissors, make a cut about 1/2 inch from the side of the scarf. Cut all the way up to the stitch you made earlier, but stop before you cut the stitch. 5. Make another cut about every 1/2 inch. 6. Repeat steps 1 through 5 on the other end. This is why fleece is such a great material to use for this project. Since it doesn't unravel, your fringe will stay nice and neat. A fleece winter scarf is quick and easy to make, and is a fashionable way to stay warm when the temperature starts to drop. Guide on how to make a tutu. To make tutus, you will need about 8 yards of tulle. You can get this material at a fabric shop, and it is usually sold at a low price. 2 yards is enough for one, but if you are making tutus for a number of people, then it is wise to buy several yards. At the same time, you may need more of this material if you are planning on putting additional designs. You may also need more tulle if you decide to go for multicolored skirts. 1. Measure the waist of the girl. From that measurement, subtract about 3 inches. The result will be the length of your elastic. It is necessary to reduce the length because of the stretchability. When you tie the tulle strips around the elastic, it will get stretched a bit. Deduct a few inches from the elastic to make sure that you don't come up with a loose skirt. 2. Measure the length of tulle. You would need about 2 feet per skirt. It may seem a little bit too long at first, but the strips will be folded in half, so you will come up with a foot-long skirt. This length is not the standard one, though. Consider the height of the child, too, when deciding on the length to use. Cut the cloth in strips that are 4 inches wide. This will give you a tutu with just the right amount of puffiness. You can cut wider strips if you want a greater puffiness. 3. Next, tie the strips to the ribbon or elastic. There are different ways to fasten the strips to the elastic. You can simply tie, glue, or stitch them. However, it would be easier to just tie them around the elastic. When tying the strip around the elastic, find the middle part of the strip and attach that part first, so that there will be 2 strips sticking out with equal lengths. For a puffy skirt, pull the tied tulle strips tightly together on the elastic. 4. As mentioned earlier, you may use only one type of tulle. This way the skirt will only be one color. For dual-colored skirts, you can use 2 different kinds of the material, but they need to be colors that complement each other. Possible color combinations are fuchsia and pale pink, yellow and yellow-green, blue and orange, and lavender and pink. You can also have a multicolored skirt using different types of tools, but you have to be careful with the colors you choose. Of course, the colors you choose need to depend on the required one. If it's for a school presentation or show, make sure you know what shade the skirt should come in. 5. When you are done, check the tutu and see whether the outcome looks great. Fit the tutu on the child it was made for. Is it just right, or is it too loose or too tight? Is she comfortable wearing it? Does she like it? See if the edges are even. Make adjustments if needed. How to sew a throw pillow. Making throw pillows is an easy yet enjoyable procedure, and after you've learned the running stitch and the back stitch, they are a breeze to work out. There are two different ways to do this, with a pillow form and with fiber-fill stuffing. Either way is fine. It's just a matter of how you want to do it and how you feel most comfortable. First, to be able to choose what kind you want to make, you will want to know what a pillow form and fiberfill are, and the pros and cons between the two. First off, we have a pillow form. Basically, a pillow form is a non-decorative, rather ugly pillow that is stuffed inside of your fabric. It helps your pillow keep its form, plus they're easy to use, especially for a beginner. The cons are that they can be rather expensive if you don't keep an eye out for sales and good deals. Fiberfill is also pretty easy to use, even though sometimes it just doesn't want to work. Basically, it's what you commonly think of as stuffing, the stuff that they put inside of stuffed animals and pillows. Its pros contain that it's inexpensive and can be found almost anywhere. Those are two very important features. The one con that I can think of off the top of my head is that it's sometimes hard to get it stuffed in easily. It's sometimes thinner in certain places than it is in the rest of the pillow, or several lumps and bumps throughout. But practice does make better, that's for sure. You can also control the firmness of the pillow. That's another pro. Plus, you can make the pillows in absolutely any size you want. That's just much more control. With a form, you can only make a pillow in the sizes that they offer the form. So now that we've considered the different types of stuffing for pillows, let's get down to business and do the actual preparation and sewing part. For preparation, let's collect the materials first. Since the pillow is such a simple project, not many materials are required. Start off with the fabric for the pillow and your choice of a form or fiberfill. Then get some matching thread, some hand needles, and a couple of pins, scissors, and perhaps something to mark your fabric with. First off, decide what size you'd like your pillow to be. Let's just say, for the purposes of an example, that I wanted to make a throw pillow that's 7 inches square. Now you need to add half an inch to each side, in other words, a whole inch. That's the size you'll end up cutting your fabric. Mine will end up being 8 inches. That gives you enough room to sew around the edges. Cut two pieces of fabric in this size, and then place the two right sides together. Pin one side, making sure that the two pieces are secure. Then, using a basic running stitch, sew to the other end, 1/2 inch from the edge. Backstitch a few times before ending with a knot. Continue this around two of the other sides, leaving one side open. Once the third side is finished off, take the fabric and turn it so that the right sides are on the outside. This is where you stuff it. Either place the form inside or stuff the fiberfill inside evenly. Then, using a simple whip stitch, close up the opening. And there you have it, a completed throw pillow. Good job! Easy skirt tutorial. Are you in the mood to make a skirt, but don't have a skirt pattern handy? Do you have some extra fabric lying around and can't think of anything to do with it? Or are you just looking for a simple sewing project to keep you occupied for a few hours? If your answer to any of these questions is yes, try this easy skirt tutorial on for size. What you'll need: a piece of fabric, coordinating thread, a fabric marker or fabric pencil, a tape measure, elastic, fabric scissors, an iron, pins. Choosing your fabric. The great thing about this skirt is that it can be any length you want it to be. And as long as you have a piece of fabric that can wrap around your lower body, especially your hips, you can use it to whip up this quick and easy skirt. If you want to buy new material for your skirt, you'll have to take some quick measurements before you head for the fabric store. Luckily, there's nothing to it. First, wrap a tape measure around your hips. Take this measurement and add 3 or 4 extra inches to it. Next, hold the end of the tape measure against your waist where you think the waist of your skirt will be. Let the tape measure fall to the floor and decide where you want the hem to be. Take the measurement at the imaginary hem and add an extra 2 or 3 inches to it. So for example, if the hip measurement is 42 inches and the hem measurement is 25 inches, you'll need a piece of fabric that's about 45 inches by 28 inches. Instructions. If you haven't already, measure your hips, the widest part of your lower body. Simply wrap the tape measure around your hips and write down the measurement. Lay the fabric out on a flat surface. Lay the tape measure on top of the fabric. Measuring from the left edge, place a mark where your hip measurement was. Now you have 2 choices. Alternative number 1. If you're using a stretchy fabric and don't mind the skirt fitting close around your hips, you can cut the length of the fabric about 1/4 to 1/2 inch from the first mark. Alternative number 2. If you don't want the skirt to be too snug around your hips, you need to give yourself some extra room. Place your tape measure on the mark you just made and make another mark 1 to 3 inches, depending on how much extra room you want, out from the first mark. Cut the length of the fabric along this mark. Take your fabric and fold it in half, wrong side out, so that the side you don't want people to see is showing. Pin the 2 edges together. Sew a seam along the edges of the fabric, leaving about a 1/4 inch seam allowance. Make sure this stitch is sturdy and will hold for the long haul. Use the tape measure to measure your waist where you expect the waist of your skirt to be. Cut a piece of elastic that's as long as the waist measurement. Feel free to add an extra 1/2 inch to 1 inch to the length of the measurement if you want to have a little more room in the waist. Fold the elastic in half and sew the 2 ends together. Slip the elastic around the top of the skirt. Fold the top of the skirt down so that it covers the elastic. Place pins under the elastic, leaving enough room to sew a seam under the pins. Sew the top fold down, making sure you don't sew the elastic. You can iron the fold to hold it in place, but that step is optional. Turn the fabric right side out so that the side you'll want people to see is showing. Slip on the skirt to see how it fits. What about the length? If the skirt is a little longer than you'd like it to be, decide where you want the hem to fall and place a mark about 1/2 inch under that mark. Cut away the excess fabric at the bottom of the skirt along the mark you made. This cut doesn't have to be neat because no one will see it. An easy way to make the cut is to lay the skirt flat and cut straight across both pieces of fabric at the same time. Fold the bottom edge of the fabric in about 1/2 inch and sew a seam along the edge of this fold. Use your iron to give the fold a good pressing. This simple, comfortable skirt can be put together in just an hour or two. In fact, you can make several skirts in one afternoon using the extra pieces of fabric you have lying around your sewing room. How to make a simple table runner. A table runner is a great alternative to a tablecloth. What if you have a beautiful new table that you don't want to hide? With a table runner, you can dress up your table without completely covering it up. Runners can also help to protect your table from serving dishes that might be a bit too hot. Follow this step-by-step tutorial, and you can make a beautiful but simple table runner in no time. What you'll need: focus fabric that is 12 inches by 44 inches. Focus fabric is the star of your runner. Backing fabric that is 18 by 44 inches. Thread that matches the backing fabric. an iron, a sewing machine, dressmaker pins, a ruler or tape measure, a rotary cutter, optional, a cutting board, optional. Choosing the fabric. The first step in any sewing project is choosing the fabrics. The focus fabric, the main attraction of your runner, should be 12 inches wide and about 44 inches long. An inch or so of extra length won't hurt. A fabric with a pattern will work best. Choose a backing fabric that will complement the focus fabric. Simply choose one of the colors from the pattern of the focus fabric and use that as the backing color. Making the runner. Spread the backing fabric out on a flat surface. Its right side, the side you'll want people to see, should be facing up. Lay the focus fabric right side down on top of the backing fabric. Pin the two pieces of fabric together on their right and left sides, making sure the top and bottom edges are also lined up. Don't worry about the backing fabric being bigger than the focus fabric. It will all make sense in just a little bit. Sew the fabric on both pinned sides. Use a seam allowance of between 1/4 and 1/2 of an inch, whichever one you're most comfortable with. After sewing, you will have a fabric tube. Turn the fabric tube inside out so that the right sides of both fabrics are facing out. Lay the tube on a flat surface so that the backing fabric is on the bottom and the focus fabric is on top. When you smooth the fabric down, some of the border fabric will be visible on the sides. These are your borders. Arrange the fabrics so that the same amount of border is showing on both sides. You can use a ruler or tape measure for this step if you don't think you can do it by eye. Use an iron set to steam to press the unfinished runner, focusing on the seams, the folds, on each side. You want the seams to be sharp and crisp. This step isn't necessary, but will help the runner hold its shape during washing. Sew a stitch down the length of each border. Try to get the stitch as close to the focus fabric as you can. Finishing the ends. Now it's time to finish the two ends, the top and the bottom, of your table runner. There are basically two ways to do this, depending on which you like best and which you find the easiest. Option 1. Fold the edges toward the backing about 1/4 of an inch. Give the seam a good pressing, and then sew the hem. This is the easiest way to finish off your table runner, but if you want to do something a little fancier, there is another option. Option 2. If the edges are ragged or uneven, you can use a rotary cutter to trim them. Then, use a zigzag stitch to finish the edges off. This way, your table runner will be more or less reversible. If you want to quickly give your table a new look, or there's a stain on the front of the table runner that you don't want anyone to see, just flip the table runner over and you're set. More table runner tips. Choose a fabric that will hold its shape like cotton. A cotton polyester blend will work too, and home decor fabrics make great runners. Given that table runners are so easy to make and use so little fabric compared to tablecloths, you can have a collection of table runners for every season, holiday, or special occasion. Just choose a few themed fabrics to match the occasion, and you can make 3 or 4 table runners in a single afternoon. A single table runner looks great running down the center of a table, but 3 or 4 matching table runners can look great running across the width of your table. And if your table runners are longer than your table is wide, that's okay. Just let the ends of the table runners hang off the sides of the table. Sewing easy fleece baby blankets. Fleece baby blankets are easy to make without a sewing machine or even a needle and thread. Adding a sewing machine to the mix makes for an endless variety of options. Babies love the softness of fleece, and parents love the ease of cleaning. There are so many fun colors and patterns and textures available. This article will give some ideas which will get you on your way to making fleece blankets for everyone on your list. Fleece is great to work with, especially since the cut edges are clean and don't need hemming. To make the blanket, pick at least two colors or patterns of fleece that look nice together. Often, I will get three pieces, two that I will use for the main body of the blanket, and a third that I will use as an accent. Fleece comes in different patterns and textures, so feel free to mix and match. The size of the blanket depends on what it will be used for. Make it a meter or so square if you want to put it on the floor for a baby to play on. For a car seat or stroller, make it half a meter wide and 3/4 of a meter long. There is no right size for a blanket. It all depends on how you want it to be used. After you have the pieces that you're going to use for the main body of the blanket, you are ready to cut. Cut the pieces into panels. Here is where your creativity comes in. If you want two panels, an idea is to cut one wider than the other. Another option is to use three panels, two of one pattern and one of the other. Sew the pieces together using a straight stitch. After the straight stitch, you'll go back over the seam again, but this time with the seam opened out so it sits flat. I use a scallop stitch for this. Once you have all of the pieces sewn together and have flattened the seams with the scallop stitch, you are ready to give the blanket a nice edge. If you're going to make a lot of blankets, there are rulers you can buy in the Fabric Notions area that guide you in cutting scalloped or diamond edges. If you don't have a rolling cutter, you are really missing something. You will also need a cutting mat to use this. For one or two blankets, scissors are fine, but if you think you'll be making more, I highly recommend the small investment. If you have a ruler with the different edges, pick the edge you want to use and either mark the fabric and cut it with scissors, or use the roller cutter and ruler together. You can also make a nice edge using a regular ruler. Draw a straight line across the entire edge of the blanket, using scissors cut inside the line in either a scallop or V pattern all the way around the blanket. Now you are ready to add some accents. There are so many ideas for this, and I encourage you to explore anything that sounds fun. You can cut out parts of the pattern of one fabric and scatter and sew them on the other panels. You can cut long strips of the accent pattern and sew them on in a diagonal. You can leave it simple and not add any accents. You can cut out hearts, butterflies, flowers, etc., and sew them onto a panel. Use your imagination. This has been Sewing for Beginners, step-by-step guide to hand sewing and sewing machine. Knitting for Beginners. Written by Claire Caruso. Narrated by Amy Saxton. Copyright 2018 by Claire Caruso. Production copyright by Claire Caruso.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.